Is your child hard to understand when speaking? Does your child's attention drift when listening? Does your child struggle with phonics, reading, or spelling? Is he or she exhausted at the end of the day, or fail to monitor their voice volume or content? Any of these challenges could be related to auditory processing. Today, we have Doctor of Audiology Sydney Fox here with us to help you understand the role of auditory processing in learning and how to test for and improve auditory processing issues. This is LD Expert Live. Welcome to LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning differences, dyslexia, and auditory processing and attention challenges. I'm Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers and author of At Wit's End, A Parent's Guide to Ending the Struggle, Tears, and Turmoil of Learning Disabilities. To get a free copy, go to parentsatwitsend.com. I'm so excited about this show today. Dr. Fox told me that she was mesmerized by auditory processing in her doctoral work. And I have to admit, it's a pretty hot topic for me as well. So we should have a lot of fun here. At Stowell Learning Centers, we really started digging into auditory training in 2000. And the impact it has had on our students and their futures has been incredible. Our guest today is Dr. Sydney Fox. Dr. Fox is an audiologist who has been in the field for over 40 years. After 23 years at UCLA, 3 years at USC, and 10 years in private practice, she decided to focus on auditory processing disorders, which is a learning problem affecting the auditory pathways. Dr. Fox lives with her husband in Granada Hills, California, and is the mother of two amazing sons and two wonderful daughters-in-law. Welcome, Dr. Fox.
Hi there. Hello, everybody from Los Angeles.
And all over, right?
Right.
Well, it is so great to have you here. I'm so excited about this. You have done so much work in the field of audiology. Why the focus on auditory processing? What is auditory processing?
Well, the focus happened because I believe that if you're really, really good at what you do, you eventually reach a burnout point. And I was at that burnout point. I was doing diagnostics. I was working with children. I was fitting hearing aids. And I just finally reached a point where I didn't have any more to give. And I was doing my doctoral work at that time. And we had a class on auditory processing. And all of a sudden, the little heart started fluttering and the brain started shooting off. And I said, wow, this is like putting together a puzzle. And I got very excited about it. And with focusing on that and deciding to focus on that and give up the other things, I was rejuvenated. It was wonderful. And I loved being an audiologist again. And so that's pretty much what the situation is. I forgot what your other question was.
Well, just you know, kind of what is auditory processing?
Okay. Well, auditory processing is, you got to think in terms of a house and you're building a house, okay? And auditory, the auditory senses, the auditory ability is the floor of your house, okay? And it has to be intact for you to build your walls and your roof, put in your plumbing and your electricity. And if it's, and so that is your reading ability, your speaking ability, your language ability. And if your floor, auditory, has got holes in it, everything else will fall on top of it. So you have to go in through the brain, through the auditory system first and foremost, in order to achieve the language skills that we want our children and ourselves to have.
Let's think about how language works. So let's take a word like cat. Mm-hmm. What actually has to happen for us to receive and understand that word?
Okay. So you say the word cat to me, and cat travels to my ear through acoustic energy, and it goes into your ear canal and hits that eardrum, which vibrates, and is changed from acoustic energy into mechanical energy. Now, you have to understand at this point, it's not cat. It's being divided down into its subdivisions, into frequencies and intensities and durations. And it goes into the middle portion of the ear with all those little bones, where it's changed into mechanical energy, and then goes into that snail thing, which is the inner ear, where it's changed into electrical energy. The electrical energy then jumps onto the nerve, the auditory nerve, and goes into the brain. And it's met by a traffic cop. And the traffic cop says, "Oh, this is auditory information. How exciting. You're going to get, for those of us here in California, on the 405 and take it north." And so this information, the frequencies, the intensities, the durations get up on the 405. And every time there's an off ramp, it gets off and it goes to the bottom of the ramp where all these little worker bees come and they start tuning and making changes in this signal. Now, it's kind of like you can kind of describe it like a pit stop, okay, in a car race. The pit stop, if somebody forgets to fill up the car with gas, it gets up on the racetrack and runs out of gas and is out of the race. That's not what happens with the auditory signal. If something didn't get done or didn't get done properly, it gets back up onto the freeway and continues its travels until it finally gets to the auditory cortex, okay, the top part of the brain, all right, where it may arrive correctly or it may arrive incorrectly. And at the auditory cortex, it's the first place that this stuff is decoded, all right? So it looks at the signal and says, "Oh, we've got a k sound, we got an a sound, and we've got a t sound." Okay, it's not a word, it's just k at. Well, if something didn't get done properly, maybe it says, "Oh, we've got a k sound, an a sound, and a t sound," which, you know, when you put it together is a totally different word. Well, this k at then goes next door to the secondary associate cortex, where it's merged into cat. But it's not a word yet. It's not a word. It's cat. And then that gets sent over to the linguistic cortex. And the linguistic cortex takes out its huge dictionary to find out, is this a word or is it nonsense? And while it's doing that, the visual cortex starts screaming, "I've got a picture. I've got a picture. I'm sending it over." And so this picture and the information, the definition of cat and cat, all get put together into a folder, which is then put into a file cabinet in memory. And so whenever you hear the word cat or see a cat or read about a cat, it all gets pulled out of this file cabinet for your use. And that's also the reason why when you read the word cat or somebody says the word cat, you immediately see a picture of a cat in your mind because they're all together in that same folder. So we've got the information in the folder in memory. Then the linguistic area goes over to get that information. Now, if that information was incorrectly put in there, all right, because it didn't get processed properly, then it goes there and it pulls out incorrect information, which then affects the top down, okay, the expressive ability of the brain to be able to, the output to read, to be able to understand what it is people are saying, what it is you're reading. And So that all gets messed up because the input was wrong. So the output's going to be wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, suppose the input got in there correctly. And when the linguistic cortex and the linguist's processing system goes to pull it out, it misinterprets that information. All right. Like the general getting information from the spies and sending out the wrong orders to the troops because the general misunderstood what it was that the information was. Okay. That becomes an output disorder. It at that point becomes a linguistic type of a problem, and it's from the linguistic cortex. So you can have an auditory component to that, but my job is to make sure that what is auditory is getting there properly. And then I turn it over to the speech language pathologist to be able to determine if the information got in there properly, then why is this information being incorrectly interpreted? And that's what I do as an auditory processing specialist, as an audiologist.
It's just amazingly complex how we get that information and how language works. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amazing. So
and the fact that the brain, when you think of a baby, of a fetus, and mm-hmm. all these millions and billions of connecting going on, you wonder, how does anybody get born normally? Because there's so much that can go wrong.
It's amazing. You mentioned that auditory processing then is a bottom-up process because it's everything mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. has to happen to get a clear, accurate message or input to the cortex. Mm-hmm. And then once that information is in the cortex, it starts getting interpreted. And that becomes then kind of a top-down process. So we have the auditory receptive language piece, and then we have the linguistic expressive language piece.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, we also have executive function, memory. We have all of these other brain processes that are acting on their own information, which then acts on this information. And mm-hmm. so you can have a multitude of things that are causing problems with everything else.
And that's one of the things that we're just so aware of when parents call us and they're concerned about their child's reading or their child's executive function or their speaking. You know, mm-hmm. we really have to, there are so many different underlying pieces that could be at the root of the issue. And so, you know, we really have to assess, to look at exactly what is causing the problem so that we can do the right intervention. Mm-hmm. At Stoa Learning Centers, we look at learning like a continuum that builds kind of like a ladder. So academic and social skills are up there on the top two tiers of the ladder. And this is where students are working at school. So when Dr. Fox talks about top down, it's kind of the top of that continuum, you know, is the top part, the high level skills, the academics and social skills. But there are whole sets of underlying skills that need to be in place in order to support the academic learning. And so when you look lower down on the continuum, you see the core learning skills level that Lauren was mentioning, where, you know, that's movement and visual skills and those developmental skills that kind of help us become organized human beings. And then we have processing skills and executive function. And if any of those supporting skills are weak or inefficient, it can cause the student to struggle. So if we want to permanently change a learning challenge, we have to identify and develop those weak underlying skills. And that's where you get some of that bottom-up approach. Auditory processing fits in that processing skills level, that blue level there. And there are many different skills involved with auditory processing, and we've touched on a few of them. But Dr. Fox, can you talk about what you're looking for when you do auditory testing and what some of those various skills are that you're looking at?
What I'm looking for, what all of us are looking for, is where in the auditory pathways the breakdown is occurring. And based on where the, so we're looking at anatomy and physiology stuff, okay? Where the problem is coming from also tells us where and what kind of therapy we need in order to build that type of problem and strengthen it. I'm looking for integration problems, left side, right side. Does the left ear hear as well as the right ear in terms of, now remember, the left side of your brain for the vast, vast, vast majority, over probably 95% of everybody, even your left-handers, is where your language center is. And so you get information coming in the right side, but it has to go over to the left side to get to this type of situation. So you've got the left side and the right ear together, and the right side and the left ear together. And we see what's called an amblyopia or a left ear weakness, okay, because the sounds aren't and the information isn't coming across the way that it should. And this can affect timing information for speech. Mm-hmm. Can affect how you hear speech. People who are very, very monotone and don't have a lot of inflection in their voice, it's probably coming from the right hemisphere. And so we have to find out where the problem's coming from. Because I had a psychiatrist who said, one of the things that I use when I see this kind of dichotic listening, two-ear listening problems, and she would use the therapy that I use when I have that problem. And she said, I'm just not getting good results with it. I don't understand what all the hullabaloo is. And I said, well, that's because you're not using it correctly. You're using it as a one, you know, this cures all. And it's not. You've got your phoneme problems, which is coming from the auditory cortex. Can they tell the difference between a buh and a puh? And what do we do to our children in first and second and third grade? What are their spelling tests? They're all rhyming words. And so you don't know what to do because you worked on these words in the kitchen the night before and your child got 100% of them correct, but they flunked the spelling test or got 50% of it wrong once they got into the room, you know? And it's because the kid could not understand, did the teacher say fun or sun or one, particularly if they don't use it in a sentence, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's coming from that particular area. You know, some of the other areas, and I'm trying to think really quickly about this, is the right hemisphere areas, the temporal issues. There's a difference between saying, oh, and for those of you in the Midwest, oh, look at the snowdrift by the window, and oh, look at the snowdrift by the window. The same words, but they mean two totally different things because of where the inflection is and the accents. Mm-hmm. You know, the same thing with words where you've got, and I've forgotten all of the words that I could give you as an indication.
I like to use the word Disneyland because we have Disneyland here mm-hmm. in Southern California. So I want to go to Disneyland, but if I accent it in the wrong place, I'm going to go to Disneyland.
Well, what is that? Whatever in the world that is, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, you know, it's the words that we use that are spelled exactly the same but have different meanings, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's because of where the accent occurs, okay? And this is all right. Right side. Okay. So you've got to do different things to build up the right hemisphere so that it transmits the sounds across that bridge to be able to then to be able to strengthen itself. You know, there are a lot of other things, and my colleagues who are seeing this are going to just come down on my head because, well, you forgot this and you forgot this and you forgot this. But this is just kind of an indication. And I do want to put in a plug, if I may, at this point. There is an organization called IGAPS, I-G-A-P-S, and it stands for International Guild of Auditory Processing Specialists. And you can go online to our website. These are the practitioners. These are not necessarily the researchers. These are the practitioners that work with the evaluation, the therapy, all of this sort of stuff. And you can get a list of people in your general area, okay? Or you can go on and you can ask, I live in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Is there somebody in my general area that I can go to have my child evaluated? It's a fabulous group of people. We have some international people on it as well. And it's a very interactive site for us professionals because we're always in a chat room talking about something and getting help from somebody else with a case maybe that we're not sure where it's supposed to go at this point or what we should be doing with it. So I just want to encourage everybody to go to igaps.org and take a look and reach out to some of these wonderfully trained, wonderful people who are on the site.
Thank you.
That was my plug.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, you know, not every audiologist has a specialty in auditory processing. And so this is a great resource, igaps.org, to find people who do have that specialty. Mm-hmm. So when someone comes to you, when someone goes to an audiologist, typically they're going for a hearing exam. How is that different than an auditory processing evaluation?
Okay. The hearing test is looking at your peripheral hearing. That's your outer ear, your middle ear, where the fluid accumulates, and your inner ear, which is where that snail thing is, okay? Mm-hmm. It doesn't go beyond the nerve of hearing, all right? So when you're doing that, you're listening to beeps. Do you hear it? Do you not hear it? You know, can you repeat words? Can you not repeat words? Can you repeat words in noise environments or not? That's what a hearing test, a diagnostic hearing test is, and that's what the majority of audiologists do. Mm-hmm. The audiologists who are involved in auditory processing are looking at the central, okay, the central area, the brain area, and we're looking at what the brain does with what it hears, okay? And that's the difference. The traditional test is what do you hear? Mm-hmm. And my test is what do you do with it? And that's the big difference.
So, and so an auditory processing disorder is really when that signal, that the ear is hearing it properly, mm-hmm. but before it gets to the cortex of the brain, it's being compromised in some way. One of those little freeway off ramps, you know, and then sending the information incorrectly to the cortex.
That's correct. That's exactly it.
And as we kind of have talked about, auditory processing problems can be really hard to spot if you don't know what you're looking for. And so children and adults with these challenges are often really misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And I know that you have been to many, many IEP meetings and you educate the team, which is really important. What do you really want teachers and other IEP team members to understand about these students?
You have a problem here, and it took me 4 or 5 years before I finally figured it out. They talk education and I talk anatomy, physiology, and we don't understand what each other is saying. And the IEP team is going, but how is it going to affect their academics? And I have to be able to understand that and put that into something that they will understand that is their language.
Their world,
and
right?
So I start off every IEP that I do, we start off with the orange and then we go into cat. So mm-hmm. everyone goes, oh, well, now I understand what you're talking about. And particularly when there's integration problems and we're talking about the bridge, I say, okay, now remember this bridge because we're going to be coming. This is integration. I'm going to be talking about this a lot with John, okay? Because this is where the weakness is coming from. So I try to make it at their level and use words that they're going to use and not just present a report that's full of gobbledygook that nobody understands. When we go through the tests that I've done, I say to them, I'm not going to read this. It's gobbledygook. You're not going to understand it. I'm going to demonstrate what we did. And then I demonstrate, you know, what happens and what we're trying to do. And then they cut. And you can see the little light bulbs going off, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I understand what you're talking about, you know. And I forgot what the question was.
just what we want IEP team members to understand about our kids with auditory processing challenges.
And that we're talking about the brain. And the brain enables the academics to occur. Right. And they can't say, well, that's all brain stuff. You know, we want the academics. You can't jump from the bottom of a ladder to the top of a ladder without climbing all of the different rungs that are on it. And they're looking at the top of the ladder and what happens with the top of the ladder. And it's really sad because sometimes in the IEP meeting, in order to get them to approve things I want, I have to say, this should improve academic, you should see an immediate improvement in academics, you know, in academics. They should be able to do the core program much better and at a higher level. And, you know, and you have to, you know, wind back around with that.
Right.
And so I think you have to keep in mind all the time, they don't understand what you're talking about. And you have to understand what they're talking about and couch what you're saying into their terms. And I think that's what I think you can scream here to high heaven and you're not going to get a change from the academics in terms of really understanding this. You're going to have to do it from us being able to give them information so that it might be new for this first kid, but for the second kid, they may say, oh, you know, we talked about something like that with blah, blah. And yeah, I kind of understand what's going on now. They're never going to totally understand everything. And I'm not going to understand everything that they're talking about. But you have to get on the same communication platform. Otherwise, it's worthless for everybody involved. And you'll never get what it is you need to get for those kids to be successful in school.
Right, right. And I think, you know, always at approaching from an educational standpoint, educating each other. And you know, with auditory processing, I find with people, the cell phone example is probably the best. Although I loved what you did when you covered this, you know, you covered up your mouth like that. That made it really evident. Wow, no wonder the child isn't getting the instructions or keeps asking me things that I just said. They're not getting a clear message. So even though they look like they're with me, they're not. So I think those are helpful demonstrations too.
We have Danita saying, I know children have common mix-ups and difficulties because they're beginning to speak and read. How early can you tell when a child has signs of an auditory processing disorder and begin testing? So at what age?
Okay. That's a tough one. All of the tests, most of the tests that we use today were normed on 7-year-olds and up. All right. So you will very often hear someone say, I can't test the child until they're 7. There are a great number of new tests that have come out that will go down to 4.6. So you can do it that early if you have the correct materials.
In these COVID times, where's the best place to start for older students mid elementary that may exhibit signs of auditory processing challenges?
You write the letter to the school. You say, I'm concerned that my child has auditory processing difficulties, and I want to get an evaluation. Now, depending on the school district, they may or may not be able to do that. And if they can't, then go on the IGAPS list and find somebody near your home and get, and you know, pay out of pocket and get them evaluated.
Anne is wondering, what are some examples of methods used to improve auditory processing issues with kids?
Well, if they have, for example, a dichotic problem, there are a number of different types of programs. You've got acoustic pine.
Oh.
With the right hemisphere. You've got CapDots, which does left hemisphere, right hemisphere. You've got Dr. Music is putting out the DIID in a form. You can do it. A lot of these things you can that are research-based, we can make it into an auditory base. Dr. Katz has Syracuse phonemic words and sentences methods. So you have a lot of different types of things that are out there, and people use different types of things. And because I'm not doing the therapy, the only programs that I just mentioned the programs that I specifically am recommending use for, but that is not by any means the only thing that's out there.
We do a tremendous amount of work with auditory training at our centers, and we do a combination of passive listening and active auditory training. And the passive listening is really a frequency-based auditory training that helps the brain to process a full range of sound frequencies so that you're going to get better discrimination, clearer message. And we use programs from Integrated Listening Systems, ILS, and Advanced Brain Technologies, both of which have a lot of research and information on their websites. And then in addition to that, we do in our sessions, whether remote or in-house, we do a lot of work with active auditory training, getting those frequencies then into the voice using, you know, specific kinds of auditory lessons and a microphone and headphones. There is a piece of equipment called Forebrain, which really helps to work with auditory training. It's a bone conduction microphone that your child can use while they're reading, you know, while they're doing different kinds of lessons, and it works on integration as well.
ILS is wonderful.
Patricia's asking, will insurance cover testing for auditory processing?
You know, that's a very interesting question. Maybe it depends on your plan. Do they cover the full amount? This is a very time-intensive procedure, okay? I spend anywhere from 6 to 8 hours on it per child. I'm not going to accept a reimbursement of $63 from the insurance company. So a lot of us do not accept insurance for this. And we give you a super bill, and then you can argue it out with your insurance people.
The child is 9, between CapDots, Hear Builders, Integrated Listening System, or Fast Forward. What would you recommend best for an integration problem?
I love CapDots. I just finished a study that's going to be published in Hearing Journal sometime in the next couple of months with two of my colleagues. The problem with a lot of these is that they don't have any kind of peer review research, but this is going to, and CapDots is one of them. I love CapDots, and I've seen tremendous improvement using CapDots. You know, Fast Forward is looking at decoding stuff. You wouldn't use Fast Forward for a dichotic listening problem. Hear Builders is an all-over listening type of thing, and it does a little of this and a little of that, and I don't remember what the other one was.
ILS.
Again, ILS is fantastic. It's a great integration system, but it's doing something different. It's not looking at dichotic listening problems. It's looking at something else. So it depends on what you're specifically looking at as to which therapy is going to address mm-hmm. that better. So mm-hmm. you just don't say, you don't put APD in a basket and say, okay, give me a therapy that's going to work. You have to figure out which one's going to work for what specifically APD is for you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Therapy has to match the root. Absolutely. Or exactly what's going on. So we probably will need to have a part two. Just because
one thing that people can, yeah.
Go ahead.
Pick up this book, When the Brain Can't Hear. It's by Terry Bellis. And it talks about what specifically is going on. And I highly recommend it. And that sure. might help a little bit if you want more.
Very good.
Perfect.
Auditory processing challenges can have such a sneaky and devastating impact on learning and social communication. And here's what I want to leave parents with today. Knowing that auditory processing can change, which opens the door to improving speech, reading, communication, comprehension, and any other areas that have been affected by that auditory deficit. Well, Dr. Fox, it has been amazing having you today. We could talk about this all day, and I'm just delighted to have had you on the broadcast. Thank you so much.
Well,
for
thank
the
you so
wealth.
Much for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you. You just shared a wealth of expertise with us, and we really appreciate it. This is LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning disabilities, dyslexia, and attention challenges. STOA Learning Centers are open for remote sessions and screenings. We're also seeing students on site with all of the COVID precautions. We work with children and adults doing targeted brain training to improve auditory processing, dyslexia, attention, thinking, and learning. If you would like a free consultation for yourself or your child, give us a call or visit our website at stowellcenter.com. Thank you again, Dr. Fox. You're amazing. And thank you to all of you, our viewers who are watching, sharing, subscribing. Have a great week.